Welcome to the Reminger Report podcast on emerging technologies. Reminger Co. LPA is a full-service law firm with over 150 lawyers spread across 14 offices and serving states throughout the Midwest. My name is Zach Pyers, and I'm a partner in Reminger's Columbus, Ohio office.
And I'm Kenton Steele, an associate in Reminger's Columbus office.
This podcast on emerging technologies will examine how changes in technology and business models affect our daily lives and how the law is adapting to respond to these changes. Welcome back to the second installment of our interview with Kelly Kay. As we explore how emerging technologies have impacted and shaped her career as a lawyer. Now, I know that in 2015 you went to Lyft, which is another company I'm sure that a lot of our listeners have heard of before, and you served as the Vice President of Business Operations. Tell us a little bit about how you secured that position.
Sure. This was where you kind of grow up one day and say, what do I want to do for a living and where do I want to work? For me, Lyft was, you know, a great opportunity that I'd identified, loved the culture of Lyft, really thought what it was trying to do and transforming the transportation industry was wonderful. I think, you know, the way they were going about it was a little bit different from their competition. And for me, I identified it as a wonderful opportunity. So I actually ended up pitching my role to the founders of Lyft. And the role that I was pitching was actually based upon what I learned when I was at PayPal. And that's when there is kind of this emerging technology coming out where it could be interpreted as something else. So the PayPal situation was, is it a bank or is it a money services business or a money transfer business? And it was really something in between. So the regulators are always trying to push you into some, like I said earlier, something that they know and recognize. And the transportation industry and what ride sharing was trying to do was really disrupt the taxi industry. And that meant that the regulators were either going to try and make ride sharing the taxi industry and regulate them like they regulate the taxi industry, which is, you know, it's a very complex regulatory system. It's kind of done at the city level and even at the state level. And ride sharing and taxis just didn't fit together in my mind. So I saw kind of what was going to be happening in that industry. And it just started, the regulations had just started coming out when I pitched this to John and Logan. And it was really about foreseeing what the future was going to be, which is a heavily regulated industry that if you didn't get ahead of it, you were going to be behind it. And that meant your business was going to be potentially limited. Your technology was going to be limited because regulations were going to come out fast without the knowledge of kind of what can the industry actually handle or manage without being disrupted itself and stopped. So I worked with them on actually trying to figure out kind of what could the rules look like based upon the concerns of the regulators. And then we tried to implement it from a product perspective in the beginning. So rather than wait for a rule to get passed and then have to modify our product, we were saying, well, what's kind of the highest common denominator of what we think the rules are going to look like across the board? And then build a product to it and then go and sell that product to the regulators and say, hey, we know you care about all these things. You care about consumer safety. You want to make sure the drivers have driver's license. You want to make sure the cars are safe. Here's how we think we can do that. And here's how we're operating our business. If you're going to craft rules, can you craft them thinking about these things that we care about and you care about versus coming to us and saying you have to have licenses just like in the taxi industry or you have to do this, this, and these other things. Because again, Lyft and Uber didn't really have control over the drivers because they weren't employees. And that was a little bit different. And I think that, you know, going in early and helping craft that from a regulatory perspective really helped me find what I thought was my dream role. And again, I came in as a compliance person and quickly became a business operations person, helping them with other things like payments, fraud, risk, operations at airports, which are kind of their own little fiefdoms and have their own set of rules. So it was a really amazing opportunity as a lawyer to kind of come in, again, not as a lawyer, but using the knowledge you have as a lawyer to help a business really on the cusp new emerging technology succeed in a way that, you know, could have been restricted if they hadn't thought in a certain way at that time.
Now, you currently are working with the Toyota Research Institute. How did you transition from Lyft to Toyota Research Institute?
This was an interesting one. So Lyft had just started working on its autonomous technology when I was there. So right at the kind of tail end, about the last 6 months I was there. And it was the hottest thing that was going on in Lyft. It's like, we're going to have an autonomous car. It's going to come out, you know, with a certain date. And, you know, we're going to rule the industry because we're going to save all this money. I started like dabbling in it, but because it was such a hot thing, I was like, well, I don't know that I want to compete with the rest of the organization who wants to be a part of autonomy. And I was approached by the Toyota Research Institute because of my ride sharing experience and my regulatory experience and kind of being a COO in the past. And they were looking for a COO. They had just set up a few months before the Toyota Research Institute. So Toyota is our parent company. And this is the R&D arm of Toyota that's really focused on autonomy, robotics, advanced materials design and discovery, as well as machine-aided cognition, all of which are all very confusing. But for me, it was a really cool opportunity to work on something that was very mission-driven. We focus on kind of human-centric research, whether it's increased safety, you know, decreasing people's traffic or deaths on the roadways through autonomous driving and advanced safety features. Robotics really designed to help the elderly age in place and kind of augment and amplify human capabilities, not replace humans, but to actually help, for instance, your father who has arthritis and is trying to like prepare his dinner or something like that. So how can our robots help do something to help people? In the advanced materials space, we're looking at things, you know, at new catalyst materials. How do we actually preserve battery life cycles? Really trying to kind of have a sustainable environment there. And then machine-aided cognition is using artificial intelligence to actually predict human behavior. So for instance, if you're trying to build a vehicle and with certain capabilities that would actually help from a sustainability perspective, you know, what should you expect to do to kind of influence people in buying those vehicles? You know, some people aren't going to want electric vehicles because they're farmers. They want to have a truck. They don't want to have to worry about battery anxiety. They want the power of a combustion engine to tow their horse trailer. So how do we actually use what we know from an AI perspective to predict how to influence that type of behavior? And for me, the mission was pretty amazing. And I've always had a mission-driven mindset as to where I want to work. Again, transforming the transportation industry at Lyft, transforming payments when I'm at PayPal. And this was really an environment where I was like, you know, as I mature as an individual and a leader, being at a mission-driven company really mattered to me. So that's how they lured me away from my wonderful job at Lyft, was to kind of come and be the COO at TRI.
Now, one of the things that you had talked about that TRI is working on, in one of the areas or the four areas that they're focused on is robotics. And I know that you and I have discussed at least tangentially in some capacity about the importance of robotic in the future of mobility. Could you elaborate a little on that?
Sure. A lot of people outside of the robotics industry don't know this, but an autonomous vehicle is really just a really big robot. So robots themselves and autonomous vehicles operate off of the same core principles from a technology perspective, you know, the ability to plan your routes, ability to predict the world around you, and the ability to see the world around you, or perception. So kind of the three P's are out there. And those apply whether you're looking at an autonomous vehicle or you're looking at a robot. So if a robot has to move through a home, it's using all of the same technologies that you would use in an autonomous vehicle. So for me, you know, starting at the robotic level, the same people and the same way of thinking go into it. So from a mobility perspective, if you're looking at micromobility, so small robots that are doing kind of last 500 foot delivery is something that many companies are thinking about. You know, the combination of an autonomous vehicle doing deliveries, and you've probably seen some of them on TV commercials and on the news and stuff like that. You know, the small autonomous vehicle pulls up, a robot goes into the back of the vehicle, pulls out the pizza and delivers the pizza to the front door, and the person doesn't have to leave their house. You know, that's kind of just an interesting, you know, mobility solution, especially during the pandemic when people didn't want to be anywhere near people. Well, okay, now I can get my pizza delivered. I don't even have to talk to the pizza delivery guy anymore because these little robots are like little mobility robots are delivering it to my door. You see it already being tested in countries like the UK in small villages, or not small villages, in pedestrian areas in villages in the UK. They have these smaller robots that are doing deliveries around the villages because they're pedestrianized areas. So these robots move very slowly, so it's a little bit safer. But yeah, so mobility and robotics are intimately intertwined, in my opinion.
One of the other major focuses or four focuses that TRI is looking at is material design and discovery. Why is this such an important focus for TRI?
So again, the news is full of information on sustainability efforts across the board right now, and carbon neutrality, and when is, you know, the automotive industry going to reach a state of carbon neutrality? You know, the manufacture of vehicles and the operation of vehicles are the largest contributors to the sustainability issues that we have right now in the world. So of course, Toyota is very concerned about this and wants to be doing, you know, on the cutting edge of kind of what is the future going to be to get to carbon neutrality. The work that we do in our we call them AMDD, so it's a mouthful to say Advanced Materials Design and Discovery all the time. This team is really focused on battery lifecycle management, as well as the looking for designing tools that can help us discover new catalyst materials. So right now, cobalt is one of the largest ingredients or materials that are involved in battery manufacture. There is going to be a world shortage of cobalt at some point soon. And that means that these rules and regulations that are being passed by regulators around the world to reach carbon neutrality, which is reaching carbon neutrality is super important, but it's not really taking into account the limits we have on our natural resources. So our team is trying to find alternatives to cobalt or other catalyst materials by using machine learning and artificial intelligence. So it's a new way of basically doing scientific research using this AI tools that we've done. So they can find new materials, new compositions of materials, and quickly use their tools to analyze whether or not that is in fact a catalyst material that is possible to replace something like cobalt. So instead of spending 20 years going through a scientific process, they're able to do it in a much shorter time frame with these new tools they're designing. So that's probably the coolest thing I think that we're working on. And we've got some of the best folks in the world on it.
You know, it's interesting because it never occurred to me as we, you know, as there's this big push in the industry, not just in the automobile industry, but in the larger, you know, global economy to reach carbon neutrality, that maybe we haven't figured out what the impacts of actually getting there will be and whether or not we can meet those based upon the available resources. So I'll be honest with you, I'm a little naive and I just assumed that somebody smarter than me had already figured that out and determined that it was something that we could accomplish. So it's interesting to me that obviously people are still working on that, which is a good thing.
Yeah. And I think it also goes to, again, the whole theme of my career, this idea that science and emerging technologies are really important to how we get into the future, how we have a sustainable future. And it's important that there is an intersection of technology and regulation at the right point of development, and that there is a partnership between regulators and scientists as we think about things like sustainability and carbon neutrality, so that we don't end up with rules that might not make sense in the long run. So I think, again, it's really important that technology and regulation are kind of done side by side and not one before the other. There's got to be this constant balance between the two if we're going to succeed.
Kelly, I wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. I know I've really enjoyed the conversation, and I know our listeners will too.
Thank you very much for having me.